Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Anne Mond Johnson. She is the Chief Executive Officer for the American Telemedicine Association. Anne, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, as I do with all of my guests, tell us a little bit about your background, how you arrived at this point, and you know some of the key inflection points as to how you got here.
Absolutely. So my background is in early stage companies, and I've done several of those prior to joining the association in the beginning of 2018. All the companies I was with previously focused on healthcare. They all use data, and the last three really focused on helping consumers navigate the healthcare system using digital apps, using decision support tools, so that they could basically make better decisions for themselves and their family. And in my experience, I really viewed telemedicine as an expression of consumerism in healthcare, which is all about what I've done in the last many, many years of my career, which is meeting people where they are. And so when I moved to DC from Chicago, was recruited to run the ATA. And again, this was pre-pandemic, so it just seemed like an interesting focus for me at this point.
And I'm going to guess that this got a whole lot more interesting and exciting for you as the pandemic unfolded.
Yes, it really did. So when I joined the ATA, and you know this, Nick, the ATA has been around for over 25 years. Telemedicine itself has been around for even longer than that. And depending on what story you believe, it's NASA or ship-to-shore radios off the East Coast. In any event, it had been around for a long time, and the organization was really very focused on ensuring that we get reimbursement and focused on issues associated with licensure. And it was the members included the clinicians, the academicians, the folks who really were pioneers in this industry. And what was clear though was that we had to start creating a bigger tent and a bigger, more compelling why we're here to get more folks to join. So we created a mission and a vision that we were here to ensure that people get care where and when they need it, and that when they do, they know it's safe, and to get healthcare where and when they need it, and that when they do, they know it's safe, effective, and appropriate, while enabling clinicians to do more good for more people. So that's a way of getting people emotionally connected to the vision of the ATA, which was an important step forward. And then we also expanded our membership approach so that today we represent over 400 organizations that are very much engaged in telehealth, including academic medical centers like UC Health in Colorado, delivery systems like Ochsner and Intermountain, Avera in South Dakota, and then payers, Humana, United. Then we also include the range of players on the solution side, the Teladoc Healths and Amwells of the world, but also organizations that are very focused on asynchronous and chat like Babylon Health, or asynchronous approaches like Roe and Hims and Hers and GoodRx. And then we have some of the more interesting disruptors in our membership, including Walmart and Best Buy Health, and folks focused on remote monitoring like Vivify, and then some of the, you know, the big behemoths, Microsoft, Amazon, HP, Intel, all of whom believe that their focus is to ensure that higher water floats more boats. So it's a very nuanced, very eclectic assortment, but very diverse. And so the way that gets expressed in our policy, priorities or policy principles, which incidentally were crafted before the pandemic, was that we were here to ensure that we were device and modality and venue agnostic. So that includes, that telemedicine includes async and synchronous, audio only, audio video, as well as remote monitoring. We were also very clear on ensuring that we were using telehealth to eliminate disparities and inequities, because pre-pandemic, we had a problem in the US, right? We had very inconsistent access to healthcare and very uneven distribution of quality healthcare. And so we really believe that technology can serve an important role in eliminating those inequities and disparities. So today, it's actually a very exciting time for the industry. I think when I first joined in 2018, I thought maybe the American Telemedicine Association was an outdated name. And now telemedicine, of course, is a household word. Everybody's heard about it. We've had such expansion and use of it by both, elderly folks, as well as the young invincibles who grew up with their iPhones or their smartphones. It's really just a completely different playing field now.
So as I listen to that, collection of large organizations, wide and varied, one of the things that strikes me is that a lot of them have different drivers. I mean, some of them are looking at this from a different perspective, maybe not all pulling in the same direction. How mm-hmm. have you managed to bring that consortium together successfully? Because clearly you have, they've all joined in. It can't all be pandemic related.
No, and that's a great question. I think the issue here is that all of these organizations are united in ensuring that people get care where and when they need it. And so to think that we can perpetuate this one-on-one physicality, which is what has been defining the American healthcare system for a long time, the members understand that that's really not possible. It's, we just don't have enough clinicians in the US to make that happen. And so what we've said is that by ensuring that we focus on being modality and venue and device agnostic, you create a pretty broad consortium and collection of players who are very much united around these higher principles of fair payment, of getting rid of legislation and regulation that's outdated, quite frankly. The telehealth cliff, as we talk about it, is because certain laws and regulations were relaxed during the public health emergency, and those are still in place, but that can go away at any time. So our members are very much focused around ensuring that the flexibilities stay in place, and then how they execute that from a payment perspective or how they execute that from a coverage perspective is very, it's varied, as you acknowledged.
So you bring up the term, the telehealth cliff. Mm-hmm. Help us understand what you mean by that and what the current perspective is on where we sit and what the potential future might hold.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, another good question. And what's really important here and what your listeners probably want to understand better is that the issue of practice of medicine and payment of medicine or healthcare at the federal and the state level are different. They're very unique roles and focuses for both. And so when the public health emergency was announced, really what happened was HHS was given certain authority to relax the restrictions that had been placed before. So 1834M is something that was put in place in 1997, which I remind people was 14 years before the iPhone was invented. And what happened is that because of that, the restrictions around geography and where someone could actually have telehealth services and get that reimbursed. Previously, it was a Medicare population, but only in rural communities. And they had to go somewhere and sort of stand on the right foot and twirl around. And it was just very arcane and complicated. And with the public health emergency, that went by the wayside. And people have been going in droves to telehealth. Nearly 45% of all Medicare beneficiaries have used telehealth services. And of those, they were incredibly satisfied. 95% of them were satisfied for their, with these services. Going off the cliff means that ability to access care where and when you need it goes away immediately. And that's what we're saying cannot happen.
You talk about 1834M. It put restrictions in place that I don't know how to describe them, but anything but economic. That they were not clinical based, because if you look at the VA system, they've been doing telehealth consults across state lines. Mm-hmm. The concept that medicine changes when you cross from Virginia into Washington, D.C. just doesn't bear any realistic consideration. Mm-hmm. We've moved past that, but they're temporary. How do we make sure that we don't step back into the dark ages? What are you doing to ensure that that's not going to be our future?
So we are working with our members in a couple of dimensions. One is, I mentioned the telehealth cliff, and that is a effort that involves policy and some advocacy at the federal and the state level. So just really communicating with Hill staff on the importance of telehealth and how well accepted it's been, the quality of care it's providing, that it is really something that has been broadly accepted by both physicians and consumers. The second thing that we've done is we announced Telehealth Awareness Week, which is September 19th through 25th. And not only do we have our members engaged in this, but we also have patient groups that are very much behind this. So for example, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, Susan G. Komen, a number of patient organizations who can point to the fact that their communities have really benefited from access. So it's messaging and work in both legislatures as well as regulators, and then messaging to the public as well, because I don't think people understand how vulnerable we are to having this all go away. And that's our job, is to let them know that it can.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Today I'm talking to Anne Mond Johnson. She is the CEO of the American Telemedicine Association. We were just talking about the history of telemedicine, you know, where it came from, but more importantly, the acceleration, I want to call it that, from the pandemic that really sort of pushed us forward, bringing along folks that I guess didn't buy into the concept, along with all of those that said, yes, this makes sense, but really pushed us into that. If we had not had the pandemic, do you think we would be in the circumstance now, or would we still be talking about the same things previously?
Well, certainly the pandemic afforded this incredible experiment in a very short period of time and the acceleration that you mentioned. But again, think about pre-pandemic, Nick, that we had an inadequate number of clinicians to deal with our increasingly aging and, in many instances, ill population. So that was something that was clearly in place. And again, the idea that if you want to address access and provide broader access, you have to use telehealth, you have to use technology. And the best instance in describing that was in mental health services, which pre-pandemic, I think it's 50% of counties in the U.S. did not have access to mental health services. And one out of five Americans had some mental health issue that required attention. So if you just look at that particular use case, what happened then is that people, you know, realized the benefit of accessing apps and accessing other services, again, using technology, using telehealth. So would it have happened as quickly? Probably not. But at the same time, I think that we should take advantage of what has been clear natural experiment and really demonstrate both satisfaction, high quality services, that this is not costly or more costly than healthcare. And in many instances, it's less expensive. And that it's not, you know, it's just another modality of care. So that's why we talk about telehealth is health.
One of the things that always stands out to me in telehealth is that the inequity that existed, irrespective of telehealth,
right,
this with the technology, and in some respects is actually potentially worse, because the folks that have or lack access to regular healthcare services struggle with the same technology. And some of the stories that I've heard through the pandemic, you know, mental health, you mentioned that, huge increase, even more. You talk 1 in 5, I imagine it's way more than that.
Way more than that, yeah.
And, you know, this is clearly on the pathway. How do we, I, you know, I know this is not the responsibility, but it must be part of the sort of the solution set is resolving that inequity that ties back to both access, so internet access, technology access, but also one of the things that just doesn't occur to you if you don't experience it, the privacy for a parent who lives in a very small apartment. I've heard stories of folks going into the car to have an interaction. What are your thoughts around that? How do we address that? Because it's essential for the persistence of this, right?
Right. I could not agree more. And what we say at the ATA is that we have not only an opportunity, but an obligation to ensure that telehealth is used to eliminate disparities and inequities in healthcare. Again, if you look at access, you're not going to solve for that without using telehealth. But the other way we look at it, from our point of view, is that there are many levers that have to be played or pulled in order to ensure that we address inequities and disparities, which, as you pointed out, have been around for quite some time, unfortunately. So connectivity is the one that people talk about the most, right? The ability to access services, broadband connectivity. And I would submit that that's probably the easiest thing to solve for. Because once you have that, you still have other issues in place, impediments in place. One is access to the devices themselves. Another is access to plans that are affordable. So if you use up all your data in communication in a session of some kind, you have a problem. So we have to address that also. And to your point earlier, the way the VA did that was through negotiating deals with T-Mobile and so other carriers that are zero rating. So when a veteran uses a particular app through the VA platform, that is not counted against their data plan. I think that's marvelous, and I would like to see more of that happen. Another issue that we have to address is the whole notion of literacy, of digital and health and technical literacy. Again, thinking on some of the challenges that people had in using telehealth, there was a significant portion of the population that couldn't figure out how to use it. Now, why is that? Because it can be hard. It shouldn't be hard. So it's not up to the consumer, the patient, to be literate. It's up to us to make it easier for them. And then finally, there's this whole notion of bias and trust. So you can have all the connectivity in the world. You can have the slickest equipment. You can have, you know, you may know how to use it, but if you don't fundamentally trust your provider, or if you feel you're being judged because you're of your race or your ethnicity or your sexual orientation, that's a problem. And so that's something that we have to address as well. So lots of different things that we have to focus on. And to that, we've organized a group within the ATA, an advisory group of members and non-members that is addressing this. And again, during Telehealth Awareness Week, which is September 19th through 25th, we'll be announcing the first of our deliverables and the first of our findings on this. And it's very exciting because, again, we have an opportunity, but we also have an obligation to make sure this happens.
I think it's important to highlight that. I mean, you know, it's nice to talk about opportunities, but I think referencing this as an obligation is a critical element to putting the ATA at front and center in helping solve this problem. You know, I'm going to go backwards because I heard something just recently that I thought highly relevant to this. When you talk about trust, and many of these communities move at the pace of trust. That was the mayor of Jacksonville, Mississippi. And I thought, you know, absolutely, if we don't engender trust through this, we really are failing in our delivery of solutions. We have to build that trust back up, I think, at this point. Relative to the plans, one of the things that really struck me through the pandemic, something else that sort of unfolded, was we don't have data caps anymore. There's no need to worry about that. But they've now all slowly been reintroduced. To your point of the telehealth cliff, it feels like there's a data cliff that has been restored, because in none of those instances, I think, there was any technical reason to limit people's access. We're doing that for economic reasons. So we have to address those elements, as part of it. So it sounds like the ATA has got that all front and center. As you think about the future, we've progressed tremendously. What are you excited about? What are you concerned about? Where's your focus in, the coming weeks and months?
So I would say that the first is this work on using telehealth to eliminate disparities and inequities in healthcare. I think that's front and center. That's an important focus of our membership, of mine, of the boards. And so we will continue down this path. And I think we're going to get results. I'm encouraged by the amount of conversation that has happened around systemic racism in healthcare in the last several months. So it's been around for a long time. As you know, your geography is your healthcare destiny, but now we're finally getting some attention on this. So that's going to be front and center for us. The second is to ensure that we drive the conversation around what hybrid care looks like. We know, as fabulous as telehealth is, it's not for everyone. It's not for every situation. And so if we believe, which we do, that virtual is a modality that should be used by clinicians at their discretion, along with consultation with their patient, then we have to drive what that looks like. So think of it as almost next generation guidelines that we'll put together. So the ATA historically had a number of guidelines around different specialties. And now, as you think about, what does it look like for dermatology, for me to interact with my clinician when I find a new bump on my arm? So those are important, because you can take a photo and send it in, but then you may have to come in and have a biopsy as well. So having those kind of conversations around hybrid. And then, just generally expanding the focus of telehealth, because it's become much more prevalent. We've recently launched a decentralized clinical trial special interest group within our membership that's chaired by Jim Malt, who's the CEO of BioIntelliSense. We're looking at a new special interest group on at-home testing. We have another one that launched under the leadership of Matt Levi from Common Spirit on digital transformation. So a lot of conversations and different efforts of harnessing the collective genius and experience of our members.
So exciting times, obviously challenging from a policy standpoint. There's, real risk with the telehealth cliff, as you described. I'm going to put you on the spot and say, what's your prediction? Do you think we're going to hold the line and maintain the value proposition and not return to the dark ages of health delivery?
So I'm pathologically optimistic. That's what happens when you're an entrepreneur. You have to be that way. So I would say that as I look to the future, what I really believe in is that the consumers and clinicians alike have so profoundly benefited from using telehealth that I don't see it going away. And I think that message is going to get to Congress. It's already at Congress. It's already in over 25 state legislatures that have put together favorable legislation supporting telehealth. So yes, I'm very optimistic. It's a way that many people and more Americans will be able to get care going forward.
No better way to finish an interview with that level of optimism. I'm with you. I think we cannot step back. There's no pathway to step back. That genie is out of the bottle. I'm excited with the progress that's been made and grateful for all the work that's being done by the ATA. Just remains for me to thank you for joining me on the show. And thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And again, very excited about the future and encourage people to join us in this work.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.